National Union, Mr. Bozich.
May it please the court, I would like to direct this court's attention this morning to what I believe is the controlling case law within this circuit that should govern the disposition of this appeal. This Seventh Circuit in Polk Brothers' decision back in 1992 and in the Anheuser-Busch decision last year, 2002, set forth the standard for overturning arbitration awards. Now, in these two decisions, this circuit has taken the position that an arbitrator is bound to follow the terms of a collective bargaining agreement and that an award that disregards that agreement cannot stand. This circuit has held that an arbitrator can't ignore the plain and unambiguous language and provisions of the contract, that an award must derive its essence from the contract itself, that although deference must be given to arbitration awards, deference to arbitrator's decisions is not the same as limitless power.
Mr. Bozich, I'm disturbed by your representations you made in your opening brief about the Illinois appellate decision, which you stated flatly that the Illinois Appellate Court had held that the collective bargaining agreement had been terminated. But that is not what they held.
If I may, I don't believe that's what the brief states.
Let's look at the brief.
Sure, Judge.
Look at page 27 of your brief.
The Illinois Appellate Court had both the trial court, had the trial court decision, it had the memorandum of agreement, and it had the collective bargaining agreement.
The issue decided by the Illinois court, one of the issues is whether Monee Nursery canceled the collective bargaining agreement. And then on the next page, you say the court ruled that the CBA was affirmatively canceled by Monee Nursery. Those are not the rulings of the Illinois Appellate Court.
Your Honor, I believe that matter basically states that it was implied
within
that ruling.
No, that is an incorrect statement. There is no such ruling.
Well, the intention wasn't to mislead. The intention was
but
to
say
that...
But it is a misstatement. Do you recognize that now?
Again, I don't...
Do you recognize that you misstated the ruling by the court?
Perhaps it was misstated, correct. But I think it was... The intention was, Judge, that the appellate court had the decision in front of it, it had the memorandum agreement in front of it, and it had the collective bargaining agreement in front of it when it had those decisions. It had that 60-day notice of termination provision before. the contract in question, this collective bargaining agreement, has the same language as the contract in the Anheuser-Busch case that was decided last year. It had a zipper clause that says the arbitrator can't amend, alter, subtract, or add to the contract. It had the integration clause that this agreement constitutes the entire agreement, that there is no other oral or written agreement before it. And further, it has, our agreement has the 60-day notice of termination language. When you consider all of those matters, the integration clause, the can alter or amend clause, and the 60-day notice of termination clause, it's clear that the arbitrator exceeded his authority. He had a contract before him that he chose to disregard.
The arbitrator made a mistake, which is something different.
No, we're not saying that he misinterpreted. We're saying that he completely disregarded the language of the contract. There is no argument that he misinterpreted. The argument is that he ignored it completely. And he's not allowed to do that. This court is not here to review misinterpretations or mistakes, but this court can and will and should review disregarding the contract terms. You have three unequivocal contract terms. You can't alter or amend it. There's an integration clause that says that this is the only agreement that controls the party's relationship, and it has a 60-day termination clause. Yet he chose to ignore each and every one of those provisions. He exceeded the bounds of his authority. He went beyond its scope. Again, this court has stated in both the Polk Brothers decision and in the Anheuser-Busch decision that that's not going to be allowed. Again, we're supposed to give great deference to these awards of these arbitrators, and that's only right and just. These courts aren't supposed to be a second round of appeal and review for every arbitration award. However, again, the decisions also say that these courts aren't supposed to just rubber stamp arbitrators' decisions. And again, the issue before us isn't whether or not he misinterpreted it, it's whether or not he disregarded it. It's clear he disregarded the zipper clause, the termination clause, the integration clause. He disregarded the contract when he awarded hourly wages to the union and not to a union employee, and when he utterly failed to explain the monetary basis for his award. He improperly expanded the scope of this arbitration to issues never submitted to the AAA by Monee. The award is irrational, it fails to draw its essence from the collective bargaining agreement, and it exceeds the scope of the arbitrator's authority. There's only one grievance that was submitted to the AAA, and the agreement limits arbitration to grievances presented in writing by the union to the company. The arbitrator can't alter or amend that provision in the contract. In the Polk's Brothers decision, this circuit expressly found that the arbitrator's award was directly contrary to the terms of the agreement. In Anheuser-Busch, the circuit found that the arbitrator disregarded the plain language of the contract. In the present case, arbitrator Perkovich disregarded the same plain language of this contract, the zipper clause, the termination clause, the integration clause. Again, he didn't misinterpret anything. He just plain ignored the contract. In the Anheuser-Busch case, the arbitrator cast aside the negotiated terms of the agreement to say that some agreement that was in effect 8 years before now control the parties. In this case, the arbitrator said that an agreement that was signed back in, I believe, 1984 somehow governed the parties' rights in 1995 and 96. In Anheuser, this court noted that the arbitrator took an end run around the clear and unambiguous restrictive terms of the contract instead of adhering to the limitations of the contract. The arbitrator in this case did a similar end run around the contract. He referred to a 1994 agreement that by its own terms acknowledged the existence of the master agreement, the collective bargaining agreement. If it's called the master agreement, there's a reason for that. It's because the collective bargaining agreement controls.
Do you deny the concept of a continuing violation?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Really?
The grievance procedure does not...
Excuse me?
The grievance procedure in the contract does not acknowledge that. The first grievance letter sent to Monee never mentioned anything about a continuing grievance. It was only when they sent their second letter to the AAA that the word continuing can be inferred from the letter itself. How can we possibly say that events taking place in 1994, 1996, 1999, under a different contract, can possibly be controlling? It's our position that they can't be.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Fosick. Ms. Chapman?
May it please the Court. My name is Catherine Chapman, and I represent the appellee, the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 150, AFL-CIO. Local 150 and Monee Nursery are parties to a collective bargaining agreement, and Monee Nursery is appealing the district court's ruling enforcing an arbitration award pursuant to the agreement. This appeal further delays the conclusion of agreement filed by Local 150 in 1993. The appeal is based primarily on two premises, neither of which are true. Monee Nursery states, one, the grievance is limited to one incident, and two, that the Illinois Appellate Court ruled that Monee Nursery effectively terminated the collective bargaining agreement. The first misstatement relied upon by Monee Nursery is that the grievance letter limited the issue to one incident. The grievance addresses Monee Nursery's assignment of a non-bargaining unit worker to bargaining unit work on heavy equipment. The grievance states, this union shall continue to hold your company liable for all back wages and fringe benefits lost by members of the bargaining unit who would have worked had your company honored our agreement. It is plain that the grievance describes an ongoing violation of the collective bargaining agreement. In further support of the argument in Monee Nursery's brief, it states that the letter sent to the American Arbitration Association defining the scope of the grievance limits the grievance to one incident. In fact, that letter states this is a continuing violation. Accordingly, Monee Nursery's position that the letter limited the issue to one incident is contradicted by the actual letter. The arbitrator in this case found that the grievance described a continuing violation, and the district court found that the arbitrator's analysis was based on the collective bargaining agreement. Monee Nursery's attempt to discredit this finding is contradicted by the very documents it cites in support. In addition, instead of referring to the collective bargaining agreement, Moni Nursery refers to statutory employment discrimination case law concepts and urges this court to find that the arbitrator should have applied those concepts to analyze the concept of a continuing violation. This argument has no place in an arbitration enforcement or vacation award action. The second misstatement relied upon by Moni Nursery is that the Illinois Appellate Court considered the September 25, 1996 letter from Moni Nursery as effective notice of cancellation of the collective bargaining agreement. This statement is completely untrue, as demonstrated from the following quotes by the Illinois Appellate Court. Quote, neither party canceled the contract, close quote. And, quote, neither of the parties took this action to terminate the contract, close quote. Like the grievance letter and the letter to the AAA, the Illinois Appellate Court decision speaks for itself and in no way supports Moni Nursery's assertions. Even if the Illinois Appellate Court had ruled on the termination of the collective bargaining agreement, the arbitrator was not bound to follow that ruling. Moni Nursery addresses this issue by urging the court to find that an arbitrator should accept factual findings made by a court, like in an NLRB case, where the NLRB defers some of the issues to arbitration. This analogy shouldn't apply here because there was no hearing on the issue of termination by a court in this case. There was no factual finding in this case. And the Illinois Appellate Court doesn't serve the same function as the NLRB, which is in part to preserve the collective bargaining process. Therefore, Moni Nursery argues the collective bargaining agreement was terminated based on a mischaracterization of the Illinois Appellate Court decision and without legal support. Moni Nursery also raised a new argument in its appeal that damages should be limited as of the date that Local 150 became aware that Moni Nursery wished to no longer be bound to the collective bargaining agreement. Not only is this argument inappropriate in the collective bargaining context, since the terms of termination are outlined in the agreement and they do not provide for unilateral termination, but the argument is also waived since it has not been raised before this appeal. Local 150 respectfully requests that this court uphold the district court's summary judgment in favor of Local 150 in enforcing the award. Local 150 also filed a motion for sanctions based on Moni Nursery's refusal to acknowledge the arbitration award, the facts, the collective bargaining agreement, and the law governing actions to vacate arbitration awards. Local 150 requests that this court grant its motion for sanctions in the form of attorney's fees and costs.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Trapp.
Thank you.
Mr. Bozich, how much time does he have? 2 minutes, 3 minutes?
Two brief points on rebuttal. The first point is, again, the union's contention is that the grievance in question permits this continuing grievance interpretation by the arbitrator. And again, Article 8, Section 1A specifically says that a grievance must be submitted within 2 weeks following the occurrence of the event giving rise to the grievance. That specifically says event. That must be interpreted as some act committed by the company.
Must be interpreted. You're disagreeing with the interpretation.
He just plain ignored that language. He didn't misinterpret it. He just plain ignored that language, just as he did the language with respect to the integration clause, which is in Article 21, and the language of the termination clause, which is in Article 22. The union.
You always call a misinterpretation an excess of arbitrators exceeding his authority.
That's one possibility. The other possibility is that, again, he's using proper terminology to clothe his decision. So it's acceptable for the reviewing courts.
Well, if you don't like arbitration, you don't have to sign these agreements.
Well, our contention was that it was never signed by Representative Moni Nursery. The lower courts found otherwise. again, the trial court and the appellate court in this state both passed on the legitimacy of the termination language, despite the fact that that letter wasn't before them. They said 60-day notice of effective cancellation is acceptable. And counsel's argument in that the that this is a we never argue the termination language in before the arbitrator or before Judge Norgel is not correct. The summary judgment motion that was filed specifically stated that the arbitrator had no authority to exceed the 1996 time limit, which is inherent in the cancellation notice. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Next case for argument is